Steve Sherlock here for Franklin Matters, Franklin Public Radio, available anywhere, anytime on the internet, WFPR.FM, and in your local Franklin, Mass. FM radio band, 102.9. Yeah, remember the dial or the push buttons you can reset? 102.9. Here today, virtually, with a school committee candidate for our biennial election coming up November 4. Ruth Ann O'Sullivan, welcome. Thank you for doing this.
Thank you for doing this. I know you've been working day and night, and there's a lot of candidates, so we appreciate you. Hopefully we'll get more views very soon on all of these candidates as it gets closer.
That's the hope. You know, we're using this platform, thanks to TV and radio, for enabling that to get your story out. Clearly, the town council is rather competitive with 15 on 9. School committee, okay, it's 8 on 7, but there's still some choices, because you've lost a couple of people to go on and do some other stuff, which is, that's part of nature, part of human course, especially here in Franklin. The life changes, phases of life change. Other things are happening now, so yeah.
Passing the baton.
So we'll start at the beginning. And if people don't necessarily know, who's Ruth Ann? Well, tell us a little bit about your Franklin story, your road to Franklin, or at least life within Franklin, and your community involvement, and we'll go from there.
Sure. Well, I was part of the 2019-2020, bought my house just before the crazy spike in Franklin. I grew up in Natick, was familiar with Franklin. I know Natick and Franklin sort of, you know, transport people back and forth a bit. After college, I moved to New York City and was in the city there. And then when I was relocated for work to expand into the Northeast, I think another candidate had talked about that. I was like, yes. And I think you did too, from New Jersey. So back to Massachusetts, and really excited. When my parents had retired, they moved out to Rutland, Mass., which was a little far from Boston for me, having, you know, enjoyed sort of being in that Metro West area. So I came back and I looked at all the towns around us, you know, Holliston, Hopkinton, Franklin, Natick, all that. And just loved Franklin and moved here primarily the schools. I loved it. We have a commuter rail. The black box was a big draw. I can't believe we had that gem locally. And then, you know, friends and just people I had grown up with sort of settled in the area. So we bought our house here, got in just before the pandemic, and I had switched to virtual. I was at the time working at a law firm in Wellesley and doing estate planning and asset protection. So it was a difficult area to be employed in when the pandemic started. So dealing with a lot of you know, really older community members who are dealing with death and tragedy and estate planning, and just we had to be in biohazard suits and at parking lots and against nursing home windows knocking to come people and they had to sign things and trying to teach, you know, widows how to Zoom but so it was a difficult, but we were sort of, we had to pivot. It was like crisis management. Let's how do we figure out how to operate? But when the schools didn't open in September, I had to give my notice and I couldn't continue because I had to have homeschool. So I do have two children. They're 13 and 14 now, but they were, when we moved here, second and third grade. So went to Oak Street, and I guess my real engagement in the civic, you know, engagement started when we had settled on Franklin, and then we were watching school committee. One of the most remembered meetings, I think, was when Dr. Amberger was on the football field, because we did it outside during COVID, and she was pleading for adequate funding. I want to say the word that she used was adequate too. It wasn't even any sort of like pie in the sky type of verbiage. But I sort of gave it a second look and said, what's going on? What do you mean? So then I just, you know, began emailing back and forth the town council. I met with Glenn Jones right away. I met with Al Charles right away. They were you know, already kind of involved in their roles. And met with Jamie Helen a couple times. And you know, I had looked into the school budget. To me, I was comparing it to other towns. It looked very comparable. It didn't look like there was anything, you know, extravagant going on in Franklin. So I was like, why aren't we having an override? It sounds like we need an override. Wasn't there a committee that started in 2019? Or and I was sort of just driving people a little nutty with that, and started organizing parents around, what that would take to organize and get a movement started. Because I was told we can't have an override. There's no grassroots movement. We need the citizens to do it. So I did my research and looked into what does it take to start a grassroots movement. And then I just said, well, I guess I'll do it. Because, I recently became unemployed and I have these kids homeschooled, and I'm not sort of using my brain in that way. So let's see what I can do to get the schools some funding. And the next thing I knew, it was sort of something that was already being discussed and pioneered by Roberta Trahan and obviously Dr. Bergen. And so I had contacted them and met with them, and that's sort of how I became involved. And next thing I knew, I was running for school committee. It was sort of, you and I talked about all the candidates that are running, and we do have eight running for school committee. That's exciting because I remember when I was asked to run, there were three open spots, and it was almost time for the ballots to be ordered. So they said, "You're doing the work anyway. Come on, get in there and advocate for the schools." So I did. And I helped recruit a couple more people. Erin Gallagher, who we are losing to the museum, which Paul Griffith was somebody I encouraged and talked into coming on board, which I'm psyched that he came on board too. So I like bringing people together, just having conversations. A lot of in-home gatherings and rallies and postcard writing and door knocking and holding signs and trying to engage the community. And that's my Franklin story. So I've been part of the overrides in town, which we've lost twice, but they were close calls, and it is hard to get an override passed, especially Franklin, after learning the history. So I'm excited to continue the work. I think we've done some big things in the school committee, and I'm enjoying the work that we're doing, and I've learned quite a bit. And I think that the schools need continued advocacy. So that's my story.
Good. Yeah, we've been seeing each other for a lot of meetings. I'm certainly on the school committee side as in my reporting role and other events, certainly as part of the override campaign, et cetera. So related to that, civil discourse, as you were, certainly is a key component of our Democratic Republic form of government. And the political divide, specifically on the national level, certainly is leading to, unfortunately, I think a wider divide here amongst the locals, which is unfortunate because, I mean, clearly in a local election, we're nonpartisan. There's no party tags when you're running for a school committee, town council, et cetera. So the question then is, as an individual, what can and would you do to help either bridge the divide or help avoid the divide going forward?
Sure. Great question, because it bothers me so much that this is even happening at a national level. I was just talking to a couple of friends of mine about this, how when you have people in your life that are just consistently talking about national politics, I always, challenge them to ask them, who are your town councilors where you live, and it's on your school committee where you live. And if they can't answer that, I'm like, it's the tabloids then. It's not, so I here in town, social media is can be really damaging to just social, public discourse. I think there's a lot of misinformation on social media and things like that. So that's a problem everywhere. I think that ultimately, national politics doesn't have a place in local politics, really, because we're not deciding on major issues around, things like abortion or things like, I don't know what the hot topics are right now, but there's a lot of discourse. And in Franklin, we just want clean water. We want, good schools. We want to retain the good teachers we have. We want to not have potholes giving us flat tires. And we want the police and fire to show up when we call them. And we want to have safe community. And so I think that ultimately, conversations and dialogue and just being open. I will say what I will do personally, and I owe Jane a call. I just tracked down Jane Tripp's number because she and I will message over Facebook, and we've been trying to get together to just kind of go over school budget things because I want to kind of loop her in and give her more insight given how much civic engagement. But Jane couldn't have been a more vocal voice for the no side of this override, and when I was on the yes side. But when I see Jane, we have completely kind, engaging conversations. And I think that, Jane is somebody that I would like to see on the council too. I would like to see, I like that she shows up and she is engaged and she questions and she's brave and she does her work. And, she'll get grief once in a while for having a number wrong here or there, but that's why I surround myself with people smarter than me consistently. I'm not, no one's perfect. So I think leading by example in that way, and extending an olive branch to somebody who might have an opposing opinion, because there's no way I think that the people who, for example, the biggest divide in Franklin would be what, the yes no voters right now, right? On the I think the people who voted no don't want our schools to fail. It's one of two reasons. It's one, they don't trust the money will go where they want it to, or they don't have the money. There's people like Max Morangiello who's running for town council who went out and advocated for tax discounts for seniors in need and got it to be more aggressive than it would have been otherwise without his advocacy. So I was really encouraging that because that's one of the ways that Norwood, which was sort of a model, they have sort of a fund to kind of supplement for the community that's hurting and not able to afford the override. So I think you have to meet people where they're at and assume good intent and just discuss policy from there. And keep
Agreed,
it
because yeah, ultimately it's just us, and we may be close neighbors or far neighbors, but we're all neighbors, and we need to figure it out somehow.
Yeah, this is local stuff. It's not rocket science. It's math and values. And we should be pretty aligned for the most part in those things.
So you alluded to some of your experience and background professionally, work-wise. You can draw on that or whatever else might help bring to the table as you come to serve on the school committee as you have already. Or another way to phrase it is, what do you bring to the table that perhaps either would help set you apart from others or enable that coordination, collaboration on the school committee itself?
Sure. I have a legal and finance background. When I was growing up, I was a figure skater. I was training, well, training like every kid dreams for the 1996 Olympics. But I took it pretty far. When I was 15, I actually was living with my coaches over in Vail, Colorado, and with Nancy Kerrigan and Paul Wiley and people, and I had real aspirations. I'm pretty tenacious when, like a dog with a bone. Like when I see injustice or I see, a problem that I think I can solve and it doesn't make sense why we're not solving it. It's like I can't turn off my brain. So I have a little bit of that competitive drive to achieve and succeed. So those overrides killed me. But I do have hope for friends. And here I am. I get back up again, right? So that's kind of a telltale sign that of resilience. But I would say also, I was in banking. I was in New York City, went there right after school. And during the recession, I was an A paper lender. I wasn't part of that subprime. We didn't sell our loans on the secondary market for anybody who's financially savvy. But I had an opportunity to expand into the Northeast and took that opportunity to relocate back to here. So right around that was the 2008 recession. So I was part of a layoff, but I was happy I was back here. And leaned into my paralegal background. So I have a I'm legal paralegal also, and that's the road I went just because the banking industry was sort of in flux. And so I enjoy policy now more than I ever thought I would, in the private sector. What I've found the most frustrating in the public sector is how much you can see how to solve a problem, but to get the buy-in of the community is such a challenge because people aren't listening. So this engagement question that keeps coming up has always been a challenge. So just, I'm somebody who invites people into my home constantly. If you talk to, I don't think there's maybe one or two town councilors that maybe haven't been in my living room. Just, hearing about what the parents that I am with are concerned about, or so I think I'm willing to show up. And I'm also willing to take action. And I'm also willing to admit that I don't know everything and seek information needed to figure things out. So I much like I, credit Obama for surrounding himself with brilliant people. I'm never the smartest person in the room. There's people that I rely on to give me insights about the budget. There's people I rely on to give me insights about policy language, and I like to think that I'm open to feedback, to pivoting, and to learning, and evolving. So it's been a big lesson the past couple of years. I also bring to the table my background. I'm not just all about the schools because my kids are in the schools and I need the schools to be great. Because I know that's sort of the narrative out there sometimes. Like when your kids get there, like pass the baton, it's your turn to be tortured and be part of the school committee. But going into this, I was first the One Franklin organizer. That was who I primarily was. That's what motivated me to get involved. So I did the work. I met with Chief Lynch and Chief McLaughlin and, the DPW directors and union presidents, and just wanted to make sure that the schools, we knew that our budget was tight. You talked to Ken Ajuku, who's one of the town council candidates, who showed up at the budget subcommittee wondering what's going on with the schools. Why is my daughter's favorite teacher getting laid off? And then, he's like an MIT grad and he does like numbers for a living too. He's looking at the budget going, there's no room. What are we doing as a town? So that's how he ended up, with me on this mission. And I kind of did the same thing. I didn't see any wiggle room. And I knew that our superintendent wouldn't want to be the villain. A lot of times the departments are sort of, when there's scarcity, they're almost put against each other in a political war, and it's hard to watch. And so I know the needs of the police station. I feel bad that the turnout looking at the new police station was so poor because they're trying to get people engaged. I would love to have people into the schools to see some of the challenges that we have. So I feel their pain. But I've familiarized myself, I think, beyond what a school committee member typically does with other departments and their needs. Educated myself. So I do think that helps as far as ultimately we're sort of courting the town council to make sure we get that budget that we would like and that we need, more so need right now. Back in the day, we might have been pushing for some, more enrichment ideas and innovations, but right now we're just trying to keep our head above water. So it's critical that we're able to communicate with the town council and have those open dialogues, which I've always been. I have them all on speed dial on my phone. I drive them crazy too. So, love me or hate me, I'm here and I show up.
Good. Thank you for that. Definitely. So now for the for reference as well for the listeners, if you have just joined us for this one, you may not be aware that all the candidates did get all the questions in advance so we could have a nice thoughtful conversation. There's no trick questions here, as you may have heard so far. All candidates got three questions the same, and then the candidates based upon the role get the next set of questions different. So school committee will be different from town council, different from planning board, respectfully. So for the school committee questions, with the redistricting decision now behind us, and a lot of work still to be done, what do you see as the key priority for the district?
I'm going to stay on brand here, and adequate funding is going to be everything. I mean, we have done as much work around efficiencies as we've been able to uncover. Like, we have closed schools. These are concessions. We have maximized our class sizes. We have imposed fees on parents that are extraordinary. $1,000 to play football. Like, yeah, it's $600 to run. Like, I got a joking parent the other day who said, Oh, my kid decided to not do cross country because I was like, sure you want to do this? I mean, I'm paying $600 for you to run through the woods. And I was like, oh, that pierces my heart that your kid just wants to join cross country. And now you're having to have a conversation like, are you sure you're committed to this? Because we want kids to just try whatever they want to try. So I think that at this point, we're our budget is very, very efficient. So I know that we've heard a dialogue around declining enrollment. Sort of coming back into the narrative, which was a really strong push from the council to us to do something big, and it had taken us a few years of audits and trying to figure out what are we going to do, how are we going to make this work, and it was voted down once because it was just a tiny piece of the puzzle, and we wanted to just do it in a real thoughtful way in its entirety. And we've done that. So now I just think the priority needs to be educating our leadership and our community, especially those that aren't stakeholders, around how efficient our budget is and what the real cost drivers of education are. They're not things like, frivolous field trips or classes running with only 12 kids, or lofty admins. We've heard some accusations and some information rhetoric in the town, and we're light, maybe on par with most admin teams. So it's like I invite people in to see the budget. Some of the people that you've mentioned or that you've met with via town council, the candidates, I've listened to their interviews, and I hear people that maybe weren't as tuned in to why the people on the yes side of this override were pushing so hard, because I think the biggest push for this override came from people who really understand that the schools have been eroded relative to what their kids experienced. I know I listened this morning to Malloy and LeBlanc, and they, LeBlanc was talking about how his first grandkid was just born, and Malloy was talking about his kids in their 30s. So I can almost guarantee that the what they were given in an education was superior to what we're getting now. It's just so, and I say that with hesitation because this is the conundrum of school committee is how do we show what's been eroded and what is lacking in competitiveness or bringing our rankings down and things that people don't love to talk about, while still giving credit to the people that are leading our schools who are outstanding. People like our superintendent, we just signed for 6 years. It's one of my proudest things that I've been involved in this community. Like, we got that guy for 6 years. Other districts are going to come after. He just did a massive redistrict, led us through two overrides that were just exhausting to even watch. And the leadership team, when they get in front of us, I get giddy of the result of the redistricting and who we have right now that has stuck with us through this. So I'm pretty optimistic about the people that we have in place if we can just give them the tools that they need. So bridging that divide and clarifying some misinformation out there, that's, it is tough when you're the biggest budget. So I know that's the next question, right? Is about, we are the biggest budget, but I think budget's always going to be my biggest concern because I do think we've got a team in place right now that is outstanding. And there's some courses that I would argue are necessary to bring back, and there's some investments we should be making. But we've done quite a bit of work with efficiency, and I love, we invited George Connolly, and George actually, I love George. So, he sort of ruined my April vacation last year because, as you know, our town administrator drops the budget narrative the Friday before April vacation every year, Friday, when all the educators go away. And so I'm away. I was in Myrtle Beach last year. The year before that, I was in Disney. I did that like epic pandemic Disney trip. And then they're like, what, why does, what, we're not going to get enough money this year. What's going to happen? And we heard George Connolly during that week say something about they haven't redistricted yet. What's going on over there? And it's like we just came out of a pandemic. We have to do this right. You can't just close schools, as you saw. It's a political nightmare. It's one of the hardest things a school district can do. But I just, shot him an email, reached out to him, and was like, "Hey, George, I know this is bothering you. Come on in." He met with Dr. Dutch, who was our business administrator at the time. Came out of that meeting like, "Oh my God, you guys need money. The schools need money." He was such a good advocate for the override. So the more I can get people who are like Malloy, he's an accountant. He has a great finance background. He ran massive firms at scale, accounting. If I get him with our business admin and our superintendent, if I can facilitate a meeting like that and bring them together, I have all the confidence in the world that they'll see why we've tightened the belt over here, and now we got to look at what we're going to do.
Yeah, because I think one of the key points, there's certainly the list of things that have been cut over the years, going back to what, 2003, or something like that. And it's hard to quantify exactly what that is, because in some cases it was, funding, in some cases it was teachers, but ultimately it was programs and education. And yeah, I've been doing this since 2006, 2007, because I was realizing that the budget cuts were there, and what education my daughters were getting, who graduated in 2004 and 2006, the kids today are not getting. They're still getting good education, but they're not getting the level of what we had, and that's going to be still the concern going forward. Without advocating, but if you just look at, and I think it's what, 85% personnel, 15%, things, very similar to the police department, very similar to the fire department. Clearly, the DPW swings the other way because they've got so much material. Theirs is more, what, 60-40. And if the numbers are off, they may be off a fraction of a percent. But there's only so much you can cut without really drastically changing services. And we saw it recently with the third ambulance. It's taken 6 months to bring the third ambulance back online because the two people that were cut had not been hired. So they need to go out to the market, hire them, get them trained, and bring them on, et cetera. How much more are we going to do? And when are we going to decide that what is the level of service we want to pay for, no matter what it costs? And we've just talked schools, police, fire. You got senior center, library, yada, yada, yada. There's the entire set of town services, never mind school site. So there's a bunch of challenges ahead, which is why we need to make good votes when it comes to November. So yeah, we were talking, getting into kind of the budget question. It's certainly the lodge, and I think you covered a bunch of things there, but do you have any other ideas in regards to how we help resolve this kind of structural deficit?
I think that it's important that we point out that with the redistricting and the massive moves that were made and the work that was undertaken, it did save 3.7 million for the town. So that was a big win. And it was a difficult challenge. We
And we
are.
should reemphasize that specifically because it's 3.7 million forever, not just 1 year, right? Because that money is gone. Some structural people are no longer there because of efficiencies with the redistricting, the new buildings, et cetera, right?
Well, and it's interesting because to go back to the declining enrollment question, all that does is hurt us. Because we get a per pupil amount times how many students are coming to the school. As soon as those students, if we lose 50 students in a year, that funding's gone immediately. Those efficiencies that maybe are created from some opportunity for more bandwidth for somebody because of class size or something, it's now going to be able to be felt in a way that's going to be easier because we can shift people within schools. Before it was a lot more difficult because we lose a couple third graders here, a couple fourth graders here. Like we can't just lay off a teacher and save a salary. And nor do districts do that every year when it ebbs and flows a bit. So we've with declining enrollment, I think people think we're going to save money, but it's really just costing us state funding, which is a tough thing to do. So we've sort of had to save ourselves a bit, without being able to pass these overrides. The redistricting created this revenue for us to be able to utilize for the town, and it also created efficiencies that will be more sustainable going forward because of that fact. So when enrollment ebbs and flows, and it's sort of reaching its it's sort of like an hourglass. It's getting to the narrowest point entering high school now. But it was so vast, so huge. It was bigger than the high school could actually manage. So we're just getting to a place where we actually can fit the kids that we have in the high school. And then, if you look at the first graders and second and kindergarten, that those are big again. We had a class with 26 kindergartners last year. And one of the cuts years ago was kindergarten aides. So it becomes like unmanageable. And we really start to look like a city when we want to look like a town, according to, master plan and things that we are getting from the town council side, open spaces and recreation. So the ECDC, which is the Early Childhood Development Center that is run through the school district, that is now expanding to where the Kennedy complex, where the Kennedy school was. And that's going to be a revenue generator, which will be helpful. There's been discussions. One of the things that through communication with the town council, some of the ideas would be, I've talked to some of the candidates. If we put a hiring freeze in place, if we're in a structural deficit and we agree that no department will hire, if that means that your operation budget will exceed 2.5% that year, then you don't hire. We can't continue to grow when we are in a deficit. And the schools could certainly manage that. So I did some numbers. I know Sue Doosnup, so she used to be the chair of FinCom for 12 years, and we were looking at the growth of the departments over the years, and schools have grown in the past 10 years like 4.6% or so. Emergency services have grown just over 6%. Chief Lynch would say, they're finally fully staffed after the numbers that they needed in 2000, and now they finally got staff, so they grow
That
at
was
8%.
prior to the cuts they just had from the failed override,
Right,
though.
right. And they had to get a recess officer, so it's a double whammy. And then general government has grown 9%, and with more people managing money comes more efficiencies. There's arguments to be made about different investments in town, but I think as we enter the structural deficit and we don't have the ability to do an override, at least in the immediate future, because the voters have spoken, then I've been discussing this policy. I also have been discussing a set allocation for the schools. I have a policy drafted. There were citizens that wanted to do it by petition during this election that we were like, whoa, 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 we gotta let's wait and talk to the council and do this, with the community involved, and it doesn't, we don't want it to look like a money grab by the schools. We want to just give our superintendent a predictable amount, because school budgets just they ebb and flow, and they have cost drivers that I think people overlook. Things like special education and transportation, and we carry our health care on our operational budget, and other departments don't. And there can be an argument made that that could help us if health care was over projected and came in less, which I don't know that that happens often, but
Not recently, anyway.
there's we're not keeping pace with inflation. And last year at the joint budget, the kickoff of the joint budget subcommittee meetings, which happened September 11th, I had asked Bob Dutch, Dr. Dutch, who was our business administrator in the schools, to come up and just talk about, in his experience, the growth of school budgets. That they're 3.5%, 4.5% a year. They don't live within that 2.5%. So we have to figure out a way for the schools to have a predictable allocation where they don't feel beholden to, our superintendent. He doesn't report to the town administrator. He does definitely. They have to work together. But you want the superintendent creating a budget that's adequate without pressure about what's available. And that's been my only, when we do our superintendent evaluations, I can't speak more highly of our superintendent. The one concern I always put on that evaluation is I'm concerned that you've grown up in a culture of scarcity, and it's unfortunate because I want to be able to convey to the community what's at stake here and what are our kids, going to miss out on. So it's a delicate balance to continue to be proud of our schools and just the amazing achievements of these kids, and still advocate that we've really lost ground. So I think it's going to take a little bit of town council policy and town council relations. I think it's critical that the town show up to this election if they care about the schools and the funding that we get. Their voices have to be heard, because the town council, I don't know what the perception is going to be of the new town council, but we are the biggest budget. So it is, sometimes I think, easier to just say, oh, it won't hurt them as much. But boy, are we efficient. We are tight as can be right now. So I don't know where. I mean, we are right now not running things. I'm getting calls about kids that, aren't getting what they want in classes and offerings and clubs. So we're already below what I would think is adequate for the schools. We've already made too many cuts. So I don't know what the answer is. I thought the answer was the override, but I think if we can gain some trust and some education and just continue this conversation, we'll fix it as a town.
Eventually, we have to. Somehow, yeah, or live with the consequences. Those are the two choices. Yeah. So while we've had clearly a budget-focused discussion, but we've discussed a bunch of other things as well. If there's another topic that you'd like to weigh in on, or just, we've got the opportunity. Voters, residents are listening. You can make your final pitch, so to speak.
I just want to invite people to reach out to me. I've had many, many, many meetings with people in the community. You reach out to me, you ask me a question. If I can, I'm happy to go have a coffee at Birchwood and catch you up to speed on some of the things that the schools are doing. And I think that the vote this time around is going to be so impactful. It's going to impact our kids. It's going to impact our home values. We're sort of at a tipping point in town, and I don't like to boohoo other towns, but there's rhetoric out there like, are we going to become this town? Or are we going to become this town? And I know that people don't like the building. I don't know as much about that area. I just know that if we're not going to pass overrides, we got to figure out how to grow in a way that the people will accept. And I know there's been advocacy again for easier accessory dwellings in order to kind of expand on, people's own personal single families, letting college kids come back and stay there for a bit, aging parents, things like that. Economic development. I know like we have a heck of a time getting those downtown, storefronts filled, and it's going to be a tough problem to solve, but we have to figure out how to bring more revenue into this town, or we're really going to suffer. And I don't want to leave on a bad note. So I want to invite the town councilors who are out there and are maybe getting involved in this because they're upset about the building. That's a big contingency right now. The sort of anti-incumbent movement that we hear. I caution people to just still vet your counselors, talk to them, find out what their values are, find out where they're going to, vote on issues that they care about. And I invite them to come talk to me, because anybody who thinks that the schools need to go line by line and tighten up the belt and get creative, I promise you, I welcome feedback. We are desperate for, advice on that front, but I believe that you'll find that we don't have wiggle room, and we're going to have to figure something else out besides cutting the schools. So I really want to invite people to come and I will facilitate meetings. I know our superintendent is a tough guy to pin down. But if it has to do with adequately funding our schools and supporting the kids of Franklin, he will make time. I know he will. So I will help facilitate those meetings and correspond and communicate and get people the information they need about our budget. And I know as a school committee, we can't make endorsements, but as a member of this community, I am highly, highly supporting Max Morangello, Caroline Griffith, and Kenna Juku. I haven't made up my mind about everybody else yet, I have a fondness very much so for Patrick Sheridan, as he's a history teacher, and he understands what we've been up against, and I like having that representation. But those three people are particularly concerned about our schools, and that is my purview. So, I care about other departments. I don't think success of schools should come at the expense of other departments, but we have to figure out a way to take care of our schools.
Thank you for that, because as I said before, we are in it together. We need to figure it out. So thank you for adding your voice to this so that the folks can make an informed vote on or before November 4th. And we'll put a quick reminder in that as we're recording this week, the ballots should be back to the town clerk. She'll start doing the mail out so that for those who have requested mail ballots, they'll start becoming available over the long weekend. And then early voting starts Friday, October 17th, and will continue through the Tuesday, November 4th, when voting is at the high school is open from 6 a.m. through 8 p.m. So thank you for taking time today to
Great.
share your story and your passion. We appreciate that. That's something that people have said, are you going to run? No, I'm not going to run. I much prefer doing this. I'm much more comfortable, but I appreciate you and every other candidate because we still need you to be in those roles making decisions on our behalf. So, thank you.
You're welcome, and thank you. All right.
And to the listeners, thank you for doing this. Quick reminder, we do this because Franklin matters.
This program was made possible by your Franklin friends and neighbors, good folks just like you. Thanks for supporting Franklin TV. And thanks for watching.